Remember the last thing he talked about at the end of Luke 17 was the second coming. You know, what was going to come, what was going to happen, and how the world was just going to continue to be going on as normal. People were going to continue to be doing normal routine activities when he came back. Certainly indicating to us that there was not going to be any great change in the world when he returned. People were going to be working. They were going to be in their houses like normal. They were going to be eating and drinking like normal. So just normal things going on. So then beginning in chapter 18, he begins by saying, then he spoke a parable to them. The men ought always to pray and not lose heart. So here is one of the occasions where he actually tells us what the parable is about before he even gives the parable. So we know the parable is about the need to continue to pray and not give up. That's what he says the parable is about. Saying, there was in a certain city a judge who did not fear God nor regard man. Now there was a widow in that city, and she came to him saying, get justice for me from my adversary. And he would not for a while, but afterward he said within himself, though I do not fear God nor regard man, yet because this widow troubles me, I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming she weary me. Remember, he had just said that he wasn't going to be with his disciples forever, but that he was going to come back. They were going to have to stay in a world that was much like our world today, you know, concerned with material goods, a world where people were more concerned about themselves than about God. They were concerned about getting ahead in this world. In other words, a world that they were not thinking about spiritual issues. He says, I'm leaving, but you're going to have to stay in that world. So the number one thing you need to do, because you're going to be in this world and I'm not going to be with you, is to make sure you continue to pray regularly and that you don't give up. He knew what the world was going to be like. He knew it was going to be a world that would never accept him. I mean, the world has never accepted Jesus very much. There's been times where there's been more than at others, but for the most part, the vast majority of the people in the world don't believe in Christ, or don't certainly believe in the Bible, or don't believe that they need to follow the Bible at all. So his disciples were going to have to live in that type of culture and that type of world, just like we are today. Our world cares very little about Christianity, cares very little about the Bible, cares very little about Jehovah. So we live in a world that's very similar to them. So he's telling them that if they're going to be able to persevere, the only thing that's going to, or the thing that's going to be most important, is being persistent in your prayer. Not giving up praying. Unending prayer. So he gives a parable about this woman and a judge. And of course he's, I don't remember the exact Latin phrase for it, but there's a phrase that describes what he's doing here. He's arguing from the lesser to the greater. See, there's this woman, he says, and a judge. And this woman had, we might say, been bullied, been hurt in different ways. And so she's trying to get some justice from the judge. That's what she's wanting. She says, get justice for me. I have this adversary. I have this enemy. Please get justice. Because that was the judge's job. The judge's job was to dish out justice. But this particular judge had no respect for people or regard for people or for God or anything. It was just all about him. So he told her no at first, and apparently several times at first he told her no. I'm not going to fool with you. She probably wasn't very important in his eyes, so forget about her. But he says, this woman is troubling me. Now again, that was his job. That's what he was supposed to do. He was supposed to be a judge who used the law to, like in this case, vindicate her, take vengeance for her. That was his job. Now this woman kept coming back and back and back. She didn't give up. Now he wasn't a good person. He wasn't a moral person. He wasn't a righteous person at all. I said he's arguing from the lesser to the greater. See, this judge was not a very good person at all. And of course he's going to compare the judge to God, who is perfectly righteous and perfectly just and perfect in every way. So that's his argument in this parable. So the judge says, she's tiring me out. She's wearing me out. She won't give up. So he goes on in verse 6, then the Lord said, hear what the unjust judge said. And shall God not avenge his own elect who cry out day and night to him, though he bears long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he really find faith on the earth? So he's arguing again. He says, look at the judge. The judge doesn't respect God or people or anything. He's not a good moral person or anything. And yet he did grant the woman's request. So he says, when you look at this judge who is no good at all, and yet because of the woman's persistence, he gave her what she needed, what was right, think about God, who is perfectly righteous and perfectly just and knows everything. Won't he, as it says, won't he avenge his own elect who cry out day and night, though he bears long with them? Now, he may not respond to them quickly as far as when they think they need to be their prayers answered. But he says, God knows exactly what his people need at every single moment. And he knows the best way to provide those needs. He knows the best way to respond, and he knows the best time to respond. So he says, that's why you're not to give up in your prayers. Keep on praying over and over and over and over again. Men always ought to pray and not lose heart. That's what he's trying to get them to understand. Prayer, and of course he's not saying that you're supposed to verbally pray 24 hours a day, because you can't do that. There's other things you're supposed to do and so forth. But he is saying that a Christian, a disciple, is supposed to have this idea of communicating with God throughout the day. I mean, that's supposed to be what a Christian does. He communicates with God during his waking hours, the whole time. So it's not something that he just verbalizes two or three times a day. It's almost a state of mind where he is constantly, you know, he is ready to pray whenever the need comes. He's ready to tell God his needs whenever it comes. The Bible says God will avenge, but he's going to do it in his way and his time and his methods. Let's go back to Psalm 73 for a moment. And when you get there, if you'll turn to verses 19 and 20. If someone would read verses 19 and 20.
Psalm 73.
Mm-hmm. 19 and 20.
Oh, how they are
talking about his enemies and what God is going to do to his enemies. God is going to avenge, this is a psalm of Asaph, his enemies. And it's a wonderful psalm. The whole psalm is about that. So, he ends up by saying, God's going to avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, there's kind of a downside here, he says. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he really find faith on the earth? When he comes back, is he really going to see the kind of faith that this woman had in the judge? Because she was persistent and she persevered. She didn't give up. She didn't lose heart. Is he going to find faith like that on the earth when he comes back? That persistent type of faith, that I'm not going to give up kind of faith? That's the question he's asking. Because, you know, this is about the last week of his life. Okay, he's got some little over a week or so left of his life before he is crucified on the cross. And, of course, he knows when he's raised from the dead, you know, his resurrection, that he's not going to find faith in his disciples because his disciples didn't think he was going to rise from the dead, even though he told them he was going to. Look at verse 33 of this chapter, Luke 18. Jesus is, actually, go back to verse 31 of Luke 18. Then he took the 12 aside and said to them, behold, we're going up to Jerusalem, and all things that are written by the prophets concerning the Son of Man will be accomplished. For he will be delivered to the Gentiles and will be mocked and insulted and spit upon. They will scourge him and kill him. And on the third day he will rise again. See, he's telling his apostles, all these awful things are going to happen, but I'm going to rise from the dead. That's not the only time he told them that. But that's one time. He said, I'm going to rise from the dead. Now turn over to Luke 24 for a moment. Now this is, he is risen from the dead, but he's not appeared to the apostles yet. He's appeared to the women, Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the other women. And they come back and tell the apostles that the Son of Man has been raised from the dead. Notice what verse 11 says in Luke 24. And their words seemed to them like idle tales, and they did not believe them. Nonsense. See, these women come back and said, the Son of Man has been raised from the dead. He's been resurrected. And the apostles says, what you're talking is nonsense. Even though Jesus had told them a week before, a little more, that he was going to be crucified, but he was going to rise from the dead. And now the apostles, who had been with Jesus for 3 years and watched him do all these miracles, don't believe these women at all. They just think they're talking nonsense. So when Jesus talks about finding faith on the earth, he knows what kind of faith there's going to be just when he rises from the dead. People won't believe it. So, let's go on a little bit more. He tells another parable in verse 9, Luke 18. Also he spoke this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. And of course, there's no doubt he's directing some of this to the Pharisees, but other people probably as well. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. Then the Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. Now notice what Jesus says this parable is about. It's about people who trust in themselves. That little phrase, in themselves, is the key to understanding the parable. The Pharisee trusted in himself. He thought he was plenty good just the way he was. and that God needed to accept him because he was so good. That's why we talk about the self-righteousness of the Pharisees. It was like he was bragging. It was like he was bragging. Look, God, how good I am. He says, I am so thankful that I am not like other men. So instead of confessing his sins, no doubt of which he had many, he decided to confess the sins of other people. He says, look at these other people. I'm going to tell you what they're like. These other people, they are extortioners. These other people, they're unjust. These other people are adulterers. He says, and some people are as horrible as this tax collector. Which was, I mean, he could see the tax collector. They both went up to the temple at the same time to pray, so they were both there. And the Pharisee knew that this person was a tax collector. So the Pharisee, because he was so good and perfect, he didn't need to confess any of his own sins. He just decided to confess the sins of other people. Now that's self-righteousness. That's right. And it's no wonder that Jesus had some of his harshest language directed to the Pharisees for their hypocrisy, their self-righteousness. Because that's what he's doing. He's confessing other people's sins because he didn't have any himself. So he was confessing sins for other people. And no doubt, he was in a place where other people could hear him. Because one of the things he said about many of the Pharisees is they love to stand out in the open so people could hear them pray. And so no doubt he found a place there in the temple, probably the outer court, because only priests could go into the inner court. And so he was out in the outer court praying so people could hear him. And he was praying to himself. That's what it says. He prayed thus with himself. So he had confessed sins of other people, and then he talked about how good he was. I fast twice a week. I also give tithes of all that I possess. Now remember the Pharisees, one of the things Jesus will do later in a few days that we have recorded in Matthew 23 is that the Pharisees would find ways around tithing. Now, so when he says, I tithe of everything that I possess, he's probably stretching the truth there just about until it's ready to snap. They would tithe things that were not as valuable and then kind of forget about other things. He called them hypocrites many, many times in Matthew 23, and that was one of the things they did. They would tithe certain things, but then find ways around not giving God what was due. So he's talking about how wonderful he was. He's very proud of himself. He's very proud of how good he is, how bad everybody else is. And he was proud of his good works. He was probably proud of his humility, if that's possible. He was probably proud of his, because he was so humble. So now let's look at the other guy. And the tax collector, standing afar off, would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. The verbs in the Greek there say that he continued to do that. He continued to beat his breast and say that, be merciful to me, a sinner. A very, very different attitude. The tax collector didn't confess the sins of other people. He confessed his own sins. He knew he had them. He knew he had a lot of them. And he knew that if they were going to be forgiven, God was going to have to be merciful. See, the Pharisee wasn't asking God to be merciful because he didn't need God to be merciful because he didn't have any sins. So the tax collector understands his position that he needs mercy. The Pharisee didn't think he needed any mercy. The tax collector understood that he did, that he needed a lot of mercy. The ends up by saying, I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. The Bible talks so much about pride and humility. I mean, going all the way back, of course, to the Garden of Eden. But throughout the Bible, the sin of pride is displayed in people's lives, and you know the psalmist talks about the downfall of pride. So many of the Proverbs talks about pride, and know how it can bring a person down, because he says the tax collector went to his house justified and the Pharisee did not. Justified has the idea of being pronounced innocent, you know, free of guilt, not guilty, we might just say. That's what justified means. So the tax collector, because he beat his breast and said, God be merciful to me, a sinner, was considered not guilty in God's eyes. But the Pharisee, who talked about how good he was and all of his good works and the fact that he didn't sin, but all these other people sinned and he was so much better, God still considered him guilty. God still considered him guilty. And that would, of course, just blown him away if he would have known that. Let's go back and read a couple of places in Psalms a minute as we kind of finish this up. Psalms, first of all, Psalms 40. And would someone read verse 12? See, that's how he feels about his sins. They're all around me. They're everywhere. They're surrounding me. They've overtaken me. That's kind of how the tax collector would have felt in our parable. His sins had just overtaken him. He couldn't even look up because of them. There were so many of them, and they were so great, and they were such a burden that I have, like the psalmist says, that my iniquities are so many that I have more iniquities than I do hairs on my head. And then Psalm 78 is another good example of that. Psalm 78, verse 38. Would someone read that? And he was full of compassion, referring to God, forgave their sins, didn't destroy them, even though that was basically what they deserved, if you want to call it that. Many times he had to turn his anger away from them because of their sins. But why didn't he turn his anger toward them? Because he was full of compassion. So some great lessons in those two parables. First of all, about persevering in prayer, praying and having that mindset and attitude throughout the day. And then about not trusting in ourselves, but trusting in God and how that's displayed in a person's life. Well, our time is about up, so we will, Lord willing, start there in verse 15. But one thing you might note, There's a lot of teachings that take place between verse 14 and 15. Jesus' teachings on marriage and divorce in Matthew 19, that apparently takes place between verses 14 and 15 here. So it's not a, there's not a nice continual flow here in Luke's account. There's other things that Jesus taught that's not here included in Luke's account.